Live from Blog Talk Radio, Mystical Empress Life Coaching with your host, Brenda Renee.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another show at Mystical Empress with Brenda Renee. Today, I wanted to talk about the magical world of fairies. I was thinking, okay, what would be an exciting thing to bring on the show at this time of the year, springtime, which is the peak, well, spring and summer, the peak times of the year for these fairies and their activities. I have been fortunate enough to have experiences with fairies. They've been a part of my life ever since I got to this planet. And I wanted to share my experiences as well as help you find your way to the fairy world. So we'll start off at the beginning, or was it the beginning? We never really know, do we? When I was a child, I was very drawn to the natural world. I had a very traumatic childhood. And I turned to nature, plants and flowers for relief. And there was just something magical about the essence of these plants. I was born in California, and I can still remember in our front yard, we had bearded irises growing and fuchsias. And, you know, the fuchsias look like little cherns, and we would pop the little bulbs, which wasn't very nice looking back on it. But I remember feeling so at ease, enchanted around these plants. And then when I moved to Louisiana, my very first memory of Louisiana were the redbud trees blooming. And then this yard that we had our house at had been my grandparents, my adopted grandparents' homestead. And it was full of magical plants. And from there on, I always loved the plant world. Well, you're saying, okay, this is about fairies. Why is she talking about plants? Fairies are very much a part of flora and fauna, the natural world, the plants, the trees, the flowers, the herbs. And it doesn't surprise me that I was drawn into that world. Now, as these plants harbor a lot of these little fairies and things, the fairies help assist them to grow. Help them with, they're like the little maintenance crew around all of these living beings. Now, of course, the plants have spirits too. They are, you know, anything that's alive has some form of consciousness. Well, I'm going to take that back. Not necessarily even has to be alive. Crystals and gemstones have a form of consciousness. But these little fairies, they do their work and they help the plants to grow and they help the plants to die when the time for that. So I want to get into this today with you. What is the fairy realm? Well, the fairy realm is actually a parallel reality. They used to be merged in with our reality. But humans being humans, wanting to dominate everything, control everything, pushed the fairy realm back. And in the beginning, the fairies were actually our size. They were large. Some of them were a lot larger. They were giants too. But as time wore on, battles were waged, possession of land, civilization grew. The fairies are said to have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller until they became very tiny. And in some cultures, they believe that the size of a mouse, which I can't even imagine, but yeah. So this parallel reality where they live, you can call it the astral realm. Every one of these beings that you've heard of in mythology and in lore and fairy tales and things, they do exist. Just because you don't see them with your naked eye does not mean that their reality isn't out there. The way you can see them, we're going to talk about how you can, we call it parting the veil. And this parallel reality, when I explain different realities, it's like pages in a book right next door to you. They're so close that it'd be like flipping a page in a book. And as you learn more and more about it, you'll come to know this realm and you'll understand it. About what, a month ago, we had the big Denver Celebration Fair. And I was there with my booth, which is a life-size fairy world. And this joyful lady named Janine came to my booth out of breath. She was, she said, "I've been wanting to meet you for a year." And I said, "Oh, really? What for?" And she said, "I know about the fairy realm, and I want you to teach me. And I want to dedicate this show today to Miss Janine Bolin, and in hopes that some of the information here helps her on her path of the fairy realm." So this astral realm, they call it between realms. There's different portals there, and we'll talk about those portals. And we'll talk about how to find them, how to make yourself more attractive to them, even wanting to be in interaction with you. Because a lot of the fairies don't trust us. They're pretty much like wild animals now. They have an instinct. Yeah, you better stay away from those humans. They may not, you know, work out so well with you. And, you know, we've got fairies that are of the light that do want to assist. And then we got darker fairies. You know, there's always a polarity in everything on this planet. And we have the trickster fairies. But every country and culture has had its fairy lore. When Christianity rose up and started migrating across the lands, the fairy lore and the magical world got pushed back into the shadows because the religion saw the fairy realm as evil or dark or demonic. And so many people, you know, they quit talking about them. They quit thinking about them. They banned them. They put things around to scare them away. And we'll talk about that too. And so we lost a very rich part of this earth's history simply through fear and banishment. In Greece, satyrs and nymphs and fauns come, share their frolicking behavior in a lot of the Greek mythology. And they love olive trees. I was in Crete several years ago, and I, you know, it was amazing. The olive trees are growing everywhere there, and it's pretty cool to know that fairies also enjoy those trees. Now, Ireland is a big place for the fairy lore and the mythology of these little beings, and I have a particularly soft spot for Ireland. The leprechauns are very big there, and they call the fairies she, and it's spelled S-I-D-H-E, she. And the Isle of Man, the Irish Sea, and the Isle of the Blessed of Ireland, these all famous locations for fairy sightings. And this is definitely one of my goals, is to get to Ireland. People laugh at me when I tell them, you know, I'm planning to go to Ireland and I'm going to the forest. I'm going to just get lost on the land. I may not come back if the fairies take me to their realm, but I want to get into the rural areas where the people still talk about these traditions and these wee folk. I want to find out what I can, do some research, and want to see some leprechauns and some fairies. Now, I just had an idea that popped up here. Fairies, as well as humans, there's an old saying that to know a person's birth name is to have power over them. And so the fairies never want you to know their names, because they don't want you, they know how power is in a man's hands. And so they don't want you to have power over them. So good luck ever finding out the true name. In addition to that, and we're going to get into changelings later, but while I'm thinking about it so I don't forget or have to write a note to myself here, parents would not use a child's full name until they were about 4 years old, because they feared the fairies would take over the children. And that will come when we talk about the changelings. Before I forget, if anyone wants to call in, ask a question, or I'd love to hear your fairy experiences, you may call 555-602-9648. And press 1 so I know that you would like to ask. In Scotland, they had courts of fairies. One was called the Seely Court, and one was called the Unseely Court. The Seely Court were considered the good fae, or fairies, or wee folks. And they would ride in raids, R-A-D-E-S. Now, a raid is like a procession of fairies on horses, and they're very glamorous, they're very royal, they have the little princesses and the princes on their horses, and their horses are decorated in bells and jewels, and it's a sight to see. Now, these particular fairies don't have wings. The Unseely Court fly. They fly in raids instead of, you know, walking in raids. They fly. And they see them as very ghostly. They even call them the damned lot. In England, we have the fair folk. We also have the stories of King Arthur and Avalon. Now, some of the places, Anglesey of England, Grissom of Wales, are known, famously known for fairy sightings, and Yorkshire for the giants and the ogres. In Germany, this is cute, the fairies actually have dragons as pets. And you can go to the Rhine River to see the water fairies. The Black Forest is said to come alive at night with fairy activity. It's very interesting as you've been through these countries and the different places around the world, how the tales seem to correlate. Although the titles or the names, the labels are different, the tales are very similar. In Scandinavian Nordic countries, the elves, they have them broken down into two categories. The light elves are pale and they fly. They're pretty friendly. The dark elves, they want to be left alone. They're dark and they're landbound. Now, in Polynesia, they have something called the Minafuna. And these little guys are like leprechauns. And they grant wishes. They also connect fairies to the storms, the volcanoes, and the typhoons. Africa's elves and nature spirits often come in animal form. And this is interesting. If you don't know this, you'll wonder why chameleons will pop up in places where there's fairies. We have a nursery here in Colorado that has the most gigantic fairy I've ever seen in my life. And they have this little chameleon in the middle of this. Well, in Africa, the chameleon is the harbinger of death. So he's like the Grim Reaper in that culture. Russia is famous for its vampires and werewolves. And funny enough, in Russia, winter fairies are very popular. Now, in other areas around the world, fairies of the winter can be a little nasty. Most of the lighter fairies go to sleep when winter descends. China. Now, because I have feng shui background, I particularly found this intriguing when I was doing my research on fairies. In China, qi, C-H-I, qi, which is the invisible energy force we're working with when we're doing feng shui, is seen as a house fairy, a type of fairy, which was really interesting when I studied that. Japan, now here you go. You've noticed the bonsai trees, and they oftentimes will have miniature little houses or temples or little Buddhas and things in there. The Japanese believe the fairies live in their bonsais. So it's almost like all that skillful pruning and shaping of these little plants, it's like in honor of the fairy realm. In Egypt, the god Hathor was the overseer of fairies. Now, Native Americans, they do have an elf-like male who gives prophetic messages. I never was able to find his name. I need to do a little bit more research. But they also, the spirits of the totems of animals in nature have a fairy connotation. All right. Now, in America, Mount Shasta is a big place for gnome activity. And that's another place I very much want to visit. I was told to go there many, many years ago. And it's a very high vibrational place. And I, you know, as the years have unfolded, I've found more and more reasons of why I'm supposed to go there. So I will. Haunted Rock, Texas is another big fairy place to go for sightings. But I don't want to limit you to just a couple of little locations. Fairies can be found anywhere. Australia, they see the fairies as controlling the weather and providing oracles or prophetic messages. India has its fairies that assist through nature, like the lakes, the mountains, the stones, and they may say they cast their prayers to these deities to carry up to the gods. The Christian and Muslim faith have pushed the fairy world back, and they've wiped out much of the information, and all that remains are fairy tales. So I would suggest, it's just like with religion. If you've spent any time studying world religions, as I have, you would find that there's a common thread. It doesn't matter the culture. It doesn't matter the location on this globe. There are similar things being said throughout, and it's the same way with the fairy realm. So with that said, Your logic must tell you this has to have some truth to it. There are too many people telling tales that seem to overlap. I would very strongly advise you, if fairies are a passion of yours, as they are mine, I would advise you to get your hands on as many fairy tale books that you can, because you will learn more about their characteristics, way, you know, their culture, everything. You'll learn about them just as you would any other foreign culture. And as you learn these stories, you'll understand a better, you'll have a better idea of how to connect with them. For now, as I said, we have these parallel realities. The fairy folk live at the edge of realms, and we call this just beyond the veil. They will shapeshift to be in our realm, just like ghosts and entities and all that. You see them 1 minute and then they're gone the next. It takes a great amount of energy for any of these beings to manifest in this realm. And that's why they don't hang out long. You know, you have to be on your toes to see them. And so in some lore, they say that every time a fairy is visible in this realm, it shrinks them. They get smaller and smaller. So I don't know how true that is, but I do know that they blink in and they blink out. And believe it or not, we do the same thing in their realms. We blink in and out of these other realms, whether we're conscious of it or not. And a lot of that happens in dream time. You know, the Native Americans place a great deal of emphasis on the dream time, or the time when you're asleep. And years ago, I've said it earlier on this show, on these shows, that I studied Seth by Jane Roberts. And Seth talked about how important the dream time is, not only to rejuvenate your body, to heal cells. Did you know that actually when you're having dreams, dreams stimulate certain hormone production output in your body? Even the nightmares have a beneficial effect. You know, you don't have to live that scary adrenaline rush, but the nightmares bring that. And when you're in dream time, you astral travel. You go wherever you want to go. And you can become adept at, you know, managing and directing your dreams through lucid dreaming. But I don't want to get too deep into that. But I just want to say to you, I've had interactions with fairies in my dreams, as well as in my waking conscious life. So you have two different doors available to you there. When a fairy shapeshifts into our reality, they may not present themselves as what they really are. And sometimes their details don't quite match up. So you may see something. You might see a white dog, but something about that dog just doesn't look right, or you know, anything. He could, I don't know, maybe one ear is gone or something. And it's almost comical, but it's because they're having to mold energy into a physical form to be visible. All right, so this way to fairyland, what are some of these portals to get there? Well, obviously, falling down a rabbit hole, as Alice did, will definitely get you there. Meditation is a common one, or path working. And this can, when you meditate, if you go deep enough into it, it's akin to the dream state. So you're free of limitation and you can go in and experience. And I have to say to you, doing shamanic work, doing psychic work, this is a big part of it, being able to relax your mind to allow the imagination to stir. You know, and we're told as children, oh, that's just your imagination, you're making that up. But I teach people that your imagination is actually a psychic sense. You know, Walt Disney wasn't off when he said, if you can dream it, you can live it, you can achieve it. Your imagination is actually giving you psychic insight into other realities, into other worlds, into other perspectives. It's giving you a hint of what's possible. But most people foo-foo it and say, oh, it's just imagination. Now, as I said, astral travel during dream time is a very effective way to go to the fairy realm. Have you ever been walking in the forest and seen a ring of mushrooms? Yes, my husband laughed at me one day because I walked out into our backyard and there was an instantaneous, you know, like overnight ring of mushrooms. And I told him, I said, yeah, that's the fairies. And he laughed. He thought I was joking. But these rings are actually portals to get into the fairy realm. Stonehenge is another portal. Enchanted Forest. These are a big one, which is why a lot of these fairy tales go into the forest. Sacred pools, wishing wells, streams, and ponds. Now, I want to talk about this. I have these cards when I'm doing readings, and on one of the cards is a sacred stream, and another one is a sacred pool, and then I think I have a wishing well on another one. And whenever I pull those cards for someone, I know that this is an invitation to the fairy realm. They're wanting to connect with this person. One time, I had a client come in, and she was in her 80s. She was the cutest lady ever. And she sat down and the sacred pool came up for her and we started to talk about it. And I said, you know, this is a doorway into the fairy realm. So if you are to find one, then sit down beside it and meditate. If you don't have access to anything like that, then go to a sacred pool in your mind and sit. And she said, oh, honey, I do that all the time. Every time I go to my sacred pool, Sasquatch shows up and talks to me, which I just absolutely loved. And she was such a delight. You know, and people say, oh, Sasquatch, they have these movies on. I watch them and I just shake my head, you know. I watch a great deal of paranormal channels because you can always learn something. And they've got these shows where they're going to catch Sasquatch. They're going to shoot Sasquatch. They're going to do this and they're going to do that. All right, let me explain to you about Sasquatch and the Abominable Snowman. Both of these beings exist just as the fairies do. But good luck trying to catch one. They bleep in and out of this reality. If you're lucky enough to see one, it's because they've allowed you to. You know, and that's, you know, again, man thinks he can control this universe. You can't. It's out of your control. So if you're waiting to believe in Sasquatch, you're waiting for someone to have him captured in a pen, you're going to be waiting a long time because the minute a shackle, I don't even think a shackle would ever get close to him, he'd disappear. They're amazingly swift creatures. They are omnivores. They're not interested in eating you. And they live in small clusters because they know that numbers would attract more attention. They're very protective of their young. They don't necessarily care to interact with us. And their senses are so refined that they know you're in the area miles away. They smell you, they hear you, they know you're around. That's why I say if you're ever lucky enough to see one, he's just blinking in and out of this reality. The abominable man, he also exists. He's just a different form of Sasquatch. Also, I will say this, you know, I live in Colorado and there's all the mountains and I know they're up there. You go down to Pikes Peak, outside of Colorado Springs, you go through the park, you know, you drive up this gigantic mountain and they have signs in the park warning you about Sasquatch sightings. It's not like joke signs. It's literally like you would see a sign, deer crossing. There's Sasquatch crossings. They also hibernate. So when the winter comes, the snow's on the mountains, they're hibernating and possibly, you know, hibernating in their other realm, I'm sure. Okay. All right, getting back to the streams and the pond, the wishing wells. When we had wells, you know, when they were common, we didn't have all this underground plumbing. The wells were, you know, a necessity of life to have water, to have clean, good water to drink every year. And the people would go to the wells because the wells had little fairy beings in them, and they would throw things in there as offerings. They'd even do a little dance around the well. And this was to appease the spirits, to bring them good water for another year. The sacred, the streams, the ponds, lakes. Remember what I said about between worlds. Right at the edge of these waterways, doorways are another between worlds place. Right there is where those realities intersect, and that's where you can have a lot of interaction with these beings. Caves. Now, when we do shamanic work, we do journey work where we often enter a cave. Metaphorically, in our minds. And in the cave, you can go down, you can go up, you can maneuver the realities, and it serves as a portal. Okay? All right. Now, fairy rings. Whenever you see, you know, we've talked about the mushroom rings. Fairy rings can, I mean, you know, if you talk to a scientist, oh, it's a fungus or a bacteria on the grass. But you may see an area or patch of grass it's like a dark circle around it. And you're like, what happened there? That's a fairy ring. The plants primrose and cowslip. Now, I know primrose grew in Louisiana. I honestly don't know exactly where cowslip grows, but both of these plants are said to make the fairies visible to you. Sacred spaces of fairies, what they consider sacred, woodland streams, and stone piles by ruins. So these are very common across Europe. It's known. If you mess with the stones that are piled up around these ruins, you're going to have bad luck because the fairies don't like that. You're desecrating their sacred space. If you go into a space, you know, ask for permission, give thanks. Maybe give offerings. Now, fairies' temperaments, they run the gamut. You know, they're like us. You know, they have different personalities. Some of them are, you know, well, I'd say a lot of them are mostly fun-loving. You've got some that are, you know, a little darker. But for the most part, they really enjoy having a good time. They really do. They're jokesters, though. They can be tricksters. Many of the fairies, this is another thing. You know, I look at depictions of fairies, and sometimes I get a little aggravated because you'll see these cutesy, Cupid-like fairies, and that's not how I've seen them to look. I think that's going through the human filter and drawing them out to look like we would expect them to look. But a lot of them are androgynous, and there's not necessarily a male and female. I've read that about gnomes and leprechauns in particular. So I always have to laugh when I see, a couple of gnomes or, a male and a female leprechaun. They're fully sentient beings, okay? They're able to comprehend, they're able to problem solve, they're able to communicate. They are very sexual beings, and that's because they're so connected to earth energy, sensuality. Some of them are very smart, some of them are not. Just because you happen upon a fairy or, a leprechaun or whoever, don't automatically assume they're going to give you the wisdom of the ages, because they may not have it. Just like humans, you got the really smart ones and then you got the not so smart ones. A lot of them have elemental connections, like the sylphs, S-Y-L-P-H-S, they're connected to air. The salamanders, the dragons, they're connected to fire. Now, this is curious. They have a very sensitive nature about them. They can get their feelings hurt very easily. And they do honor manners and politeness. And I love that, because so many people today are moving out of good manners. And they foo-foo that. It's old-fashioned. It's old school, whatever. Fairies require you to be polite. And if you're not, good luck. You're not going to get to interact with them. Their lifetimes span between 400 and 1,000 years. They're very fascinated with us, sometimes to their detriment. But they do like to help us on occasion. They do like to trick us. And it's interesting. You know how I said they love a good time. They love music and dancing and drinking. A lot of times these fairies will get caught up and they'll drink a little too much, and that's when the humans find them. One of my all-time favorite movies, I just bought the updated version on DVD for St. Patrick's Day, was Darby O'Gill and the Little People. That was one of the best fairy movies I've ever, ever seen. So if you get a chance, you might want to check that out. Fairies also love dogs and horses. Not so much on the cats. The Manx cat, M-A-N-X, that comes from the fairy world originally. So they get along with that cat, but most cats they don't want any part of. So if you have cats in your environment, it can be a little tricky. However, I am living proof that they will come around even when cats are around. And I want to, as soon as I finish this little brief up, I want to tell you some of my experiences. Horses, again, are a big part of the fairy realm. They have their little dogs. They have their little horses. They like to go hunting. You remember the stories in King Arthur where they would go on the annual hunt for the white stag? That's a very fairy story. The whole King Arthur court and the Lancelot and, Guinevere and all of them, I was told years ago, and I'm thankful that I was told, to watch the movie Mist of Avalon. There's a book on it, but the book is incredibly thick, and it's good. But the movie itself is like 3 or 4 hours long. You have to watch it in you know, sets, sequences. But it talks about the tales of King Arthur, but it talks about them from Morgan Le Fay's perspective. And Avalon is in there. And Avalon is an island over there in England or around England. And this astrologer, the first astrology reading I ever had in my life, Jean Avery, she's passed now. But she was a damn good astrologer. And she was famous out of New York. And she read my chart and she told me about Avalon. And she was talking about how an ordinary fisherman could be out in his little boat, out in this water, and never see the island of Avalon. And then the right person that knew the secrets could lift their hands. The fog over the water would lift, and there would be Avalon. And there's a lot of sightings of this type of land masses or little islands, fairy islands around Ireland. But as I said, they're in a parallel reality, so you may or may not see them. Their favorite color is green, and they love the colors of red and white, but they don't necessarily like for us to wear green. They don't have law per se in their societies, but they don't need it. They have their manners, they have their respectful boundaries, and they abide by that. They love to dress up in foliage, flowers, and mushrooms, and they love, love, love shiny things, shiny jewelry. And they often shapeshift into owls, which is one of my totems. Many, many years ago, when I think I was about 10 years old, I used to stay, like I said, I was very nature connected. That was the most important part of my world, was nature. And all summer long, I was outside. We lived on a tract of land, 10 acres large. And so we had a lot of wooded, forested areas. And I'd go build forts, and I'd do this and do that. Was forever getting involved in poison ivy and poison oak. Was terrible. Well, one day I was in the forest with one of my best friends. We were standing there, and all of a sudden, this beautiful white horse, which I now know was a unicorn, came walking through the forest for no reason whatsoever. He wasn't running. He was just, and his hair was long. He was beautiful, absolutely pure snowflake white. And he wasn't concerned with us at all. He just walked right through and right past us. And often, as I said, these creatures will appear. And depending on, you know, your willingness to accept the idea of them, your willingness to release doubt or even logical explanations, you will see them. But this was no regular creature that walked by us. And all of these mythical beings, not just fairies, unicorns, dragons, you know, Pegasus, mermaids, all of these beings exist. My entire life, I've always had, I've always had plants, even when I was a kid, in my environment, in my bedroom. When I became an adult, it wasn't a plan. It was just, I have to have a tree in my house. And ever since I was 18 years old, I've had a tree living in my house. I'm very, very connected to trees. And they're usually ficus, weeping figs. And right now I actually have two. And it was kind of an accident because one of them was given to me. These people, I don't know, they just want to bring it back in the house. And they said, will you please take this tree off of our hands? I said, sure. Okay, so I've always had these trees, and they're usually between 9 and 10, 11 feet tall. One night, about 11 o'clock, I was about to go to bed, and at the time, I had a black cat named Xena. Well, I had this ficus tree. I had literally built a house in Louisiana and built this step up that pretty much equated to a stage for my tree in this gigantic window in the front of the house. And I was preparing to go to bed, you know, turning off the lights. And I noticed Xena looking at the tree very intently, you know, like cats do when they've spotted something to catch, like a fly or something. So I looked, I followed the cat's gaze up to the tree, and I saw this translucent being fly out of the tree and over to the window. And it was a fairy. And what it looked like, it looked like a moth with, I mean, it had the body, you know, the legs and the arms and everything, but the wings were very like a moth. And they were large. I would say this fairy was probably the size of my hand. And it gave no attention to us whatsoever. And I think that happens because they're so used to not being seen that they just go on about their business. And when you observe them, it's like you're on the outside looking in. So anyway, it flew out of the tree, went over to the window, pressed against the window, put its hands against the glass and looked out. And I looked down at the cat to make sure, you know, the cat saw what I saw, and the cat did see what I saw. And then the fairy came right back to the tree, went in, and disappeared. During this time, I owned a wholesale plant nursery. And from January through Mother's Day every year, I was intensely working in the greenhouses, growing herbs and flowers. I'd churn out between 50 and 100,000 a year. And all these long, long hours working in the greenhouses, I'd see beans running, dashing back and forth. All the plants were in, like, I sold everything in flats. If you're a plant person, you know what I mean. These little trays. And the trays were all lined up in rows on the floor of the greenhouse. And these rows were about 5 or 6 inches wide. And then there were always gaps between the flats because they didn't mesh up perfectly. And these little fairies would run, dart back and forth, and I would see them. And so, you know, and I always kept gnome statues in the greenhouses. And my favorite holiday is St. Patrick's Day. And funny enough, I met my husband on St. Patrick's Day of 2012. So that's a big day for me, in addition to the fairies and the leprechauns. Now, here's something interesting that I became aware of a year ago. There are people or beings on this planet that, well, before I say that, let me say this. I believe that God, divine, all that is the supreme being of this entire universe. And I believe that God creates everything. I mean, he may not sit there and put his hands on it, but it's him behind the existence of everything that exists, everything from planets to fairies to people to everything. So I don't believe that fairies or anything else have to go against the supreme being, because all that is means all that is. With that said, there are beings on this planet, particularly now, they've always been here, but there's an abundance now because of the shifting consciousness and nature of what this planet is evolving into and what the species is evolving into. You've heard the term light worker, I'm quite certain. That's a term that's tossed around a lot. Well, a lot of these light workers did not originate on this planet. They're called star seeds or star beings. From the time I was a little girl, I've always, always pretended to be a mermaid. Every time I swam, even if I, you know, it doesn't matter. If I were to get in a swimming pool or in the ocean right now, I predominantly swim underwater as a mermaid. And when I was a little girl in California, there was this swimming pool next door to our house. And in California, all the fencing is like cinder block walls. So I would climb up this wall and sit on top of this wall just to stare at the swimming pool. They had a gigantic mermaid tiled in the floor of the swimming pool. My very favorite fairy tale of all times is The Little Mermaid. I've never watched Disney's production of it. I'm talking about the Hans Christian Andersen version. And they say that the fairy tale you most resonate with contains truth about who you are. Well, with all of that said, a year ago, oh, and one other little detail to that story, my hair. I had very long hair when I was a child, and they cut it off, and it took me the rest of from 7 years old up until, late 20s, to grow my hair back. And I've always been very, very particular about my hair. And it seems like a source of strength and wisdom. And, you know, learning about Native cultures, I've learned, you know, that the hair is a source of psychic information. Your hair is like an antenna. And so, you know, you think about that. Think long and hard about that. Your hair is a psychic antenna. And so I've always been very particular about keeping my hair long and being very careful about the people I let, you know, work on my hair. All right, with all that said, a year ago, I got an Akashic record reading from a lady named Debbie Pilelli. And during this reading, she told me, she said, "You're a star seed from Sirius. You're a Sirian." And she said, "You were a mermaid there." And when she said that, all these memories that I'm telling you about flashed over me. And I said, "You know what? I can believe that, because that archetype, that energy has followed me throughout my life." So these beings do exist. They may not exist in the form you expect them to exist, but they do exist. Okay, see where I want to go next. So we have different kinds of fairies. We've got the gnomes and, you know, the elves, and they generally wear their little pointy hats. And they work with the earth. They're very much underground, in trees. And they help give the world, the natural world, structure. Gemstones are very much connected to them. And they also help with everything that's on the planet. They help with the human body. and with mineral assimilation in particular and nutrition. And these, the gnome group includes the elves, also the flower fairies. These are the ones that are most popular that you see, especially with the flower fairy sculptures and things you see, and dwarves. Remember the dwarves of Snow White? So these gnomes, they have their particular area of expertise. When I am doing shamanic journey, I start my entire process off with aligning my chakras. And after I do that, I walk down a set of stairs, 22. And when I get to the bottom of the stairs, there's a doorway, a very enchanted doorway, like the one in Secret Garden, which is another one of my favorite stories. And there's a little gnome beside the door. And I always offer him a gift, whether it's a crystal or a piece of cake or something shiny. And then I take my magical key and I unlock the door and I enter that world. Sylphs, as we've already discussed, S-Y-L-P-H-S, are the fairies of the air. They fly. They're concerned with weather currents. They also help children to cross over. They very much channel sexual, they help us to channel sexual energy in the creative expression. And they're concerned with the mental body, our thoughts, our thinking. They're involved wherever music and poetry and words are being spoken, sung, written. They're all about communications. The Undines, U-N-D-I-N-E-S, includes the merpeople, the mermaids. And obviously, this is connected to water and feelings. Water always has to do with feelings. And as we all have a gnome assigned to us, we have a sylph assigned to us, and we have an undine assigned to us. And they help with the fluids of the body. And they're also connected to our astral body. These are mermaids, mermen, selkies, nymphs, and sprites. And then the last of the group, and you notice each one of these is connected to an element. Salamanders. These are the ones connected to fire, lights, volcanoes, explosions. And they're very much concerned with healing work, with detoxing, transformations, sexual activity, and they're concerned with the circulation, temperature, and metabolism of the body. And this bunch is the least interested in humans. Dragons fall into this group. The phoenix falls into this group. And the jinn, J-I-N-N. Now, that's a Muslim term. We call them genies in this country. Let me tell you a little story about jinns. Oh, about 2 years ago, this lady, a Muslim lady, came to me one day for a reading. And the minute I laid eyes on her, I thought, she's a mystic. And sure enough, she was. And the first thing out of her mouth when she looked at me, she says, "You're not Greek, are you?" And I said, "Well, not in this lifetime, I'm not." And she said, "Good, I don't get along with them." Well, later on, I found out in a reading that I did for her that she and I had known each other in ancient Greece. But anyway, she started talking to me about jinns. She said, "You have a jinn attached to you." And I said, "Well, what is a jinn?" And she said, "It's an entity." And so she started telling me about this jinn, which obviously I removed after I found out I had it. You know, you guys, if you've been listening to these shows, you've heard me talk about entity attachments. It's very common, and most of us don't know we have them. But she told me, she said, these gins. I said, oh, you mean genies? And she said, yeah, you Westerners, you know, you make light, but these are not, you know, stroke of, what are they, what was that little thing? The little lamp he'd rub it and then get three wishes or whatever. Aladdin and the magic lamp or whatever. She said, no, that's not how it works. She said, the jinn live in nature. And in that culture, they don't like to be out in these wild places, especially not at night. She said, do not go outside. Don't go hang around trees, especially outside at night. She said, the jinns live in the trees. And she said, the male jinn, they apparently have genders in jinns. She said, the male jinns will fall in love with women and attach to them, and they'll cause problems in their love lives. So all of this was news to me that I'd never heard. But if you've ever gone in, off the jinn subject, but if you've ever gone outside at night and you kind of get this willy feeling, I used to have where I had my nursery, my house, I had a lot of land there too, and I had a forest. And I had a deer stand that came with the property. So I would go out there and film animals, and I would feed the deer and things, and I'd get to watch them. And oftentimes I'd be out there till after dark. And I knew the path very well. I knew the land very well. But I would always get this willy feeling walking down the path through the woods at night. And the reason for that is the spirits of these beings, the plants, all of that are very active at night, and you feel it. And that's why the nighttime has always been a suspicious time of the day, because it's the veils lift a lot at night, and these spirits are free to roam. And I want to say, as I say that too, some of the top times of the year when these things happen are fall on the changes of seasons. Now, the change of seasons, like the spring equinox around March 20th, 21st, or the autumn equinox around September 20th, 21st, summer solstice around June 20th, 21st, the dates change every year, so you have to look at the calendar. And then winter solstice. We actually got married on winter solstice in 2015. And the winter solstice is, you know, December 2021. These times of the year, the psychic energy is incredibly intense, and it's a very powerful time to manifest. A week before, a week after that date, the energy of the planet's highly charged. And in addition, the fairies are active. Spring equinox, they are said to try to steal fire and butter. They really, really love fresh butter. Now, a few more holidays that are big. Imbolc, which is February 2nd. This, now, the people who, you know, back in the old days when the fairies were really, really active in the world, people tried to protect themselves from them because they didn't trust them, they didn't understand them, and for most part, they didn't try to understand them. So they would use February 2nd as a time to seek protection from the fairies. Beltane, which is coming up when? Next Monday, May the 1st, this is a peak holiday. And the fairies, this may be another reason why the religions push the fairies out, because they're very connected in with the pagan religions, the earth-based religions. So Beltane's a big celebration. It's a highly sensual holiday when they had the festivals where the god and the goddess come together to mate. And this is a big day for the fairies. Also, the Summer Solstice, another one of my favorite movies. They did a movie about William Shakespeare's Midsummer's Eve. And the movie has Calista Flockhart, Michelle, good Lord, I can't think of her name. Beautiful, beautiful Taurus actress. She's in it. And the whole story, Shakespeare used to write about fairies all the time in his plays. And the whole story is about the night before summer solstice, and the fairies come out and they dance and they make merry and they make love and they party all night. And it's a wonderful movie. Wonderful. Samhain or Halloween, 1031. That's the Day of the Dead. In addition to the fairies running about, then there's also an opening to the spirit world of the dead, which is why, you know, the Latin countries call it the Day of the Dead Festival. On this day, it is recommended that you offer milk on a stone at night to the fairies. The Midsummer's Eve Dream, that's what the Shakespeare movie's called. And the summer holiday is the easiest day of the year to enter the fairy realm, starting the day before actual summer solstice. Wednesday in fairy world is their day of rest, like Sunday is in our culture. They don't do any magic. They don't travel. They don't do anything. Then, and it begins at sundown on Tuesday. Now, we have a lot of information about offering gifts to fairies. They do not like extravagant thank yous. They will take offerings, but they don't want you to go, you know, they don't want you to say thank you. They would rather have an offering of something to drink or something to eat. They do, and remember what we said about the manners. Tossing out scraps is not an offering. An offering is prepared. It's funny, the statement, don't cry over spilled milk, it comes from Russia, and it's about giving fairies offerings of milk. They love milk, fresh butter. They like sweets and cakes, and they also like wine. They will give you gifts, and it's great if they leave you an offering in this world. And to not accept a gift is really bad luck. You'll be penalized. But when you're in the fairy realm, in your meditations, in your dreams, don't accept a gift. Remember, I told you they're tricksters. The gift, if taken while in the fairy world, is said to trap you there. Some of their little tricks. The fairies will have large amounts of wealth. You know, and people always say, oh, I got to catch a leprechaun so I can get his pot of gold. Well, they'll trick you with imagery of wealth or pot of gold or whatever, jewels, but it's an illusion and you'll soon find out. But often they'll present these things as a way to get away from humans because they know how greedy humans are. So they know if they present something like that, then while the human's distracted with that, they can get away. Also, enchantment. Enchantment comes, it's almost like it is a spell that they can put over you. And believe it or not, we can do it too. Humans can do it. But enchantments are where they appear or the situation appears one way and it's an illusion. But the human gets caught up in the illusion. and proceeds to take action or whatever. And so, you know, eventually the illusion or the enchantment fades. In a human house, fairies do not like filth and disorder. They like cleanliness. And flower gardens, a lot of my friends garden for them. They don't like tomatoes. They love a flower garden that's not so manicured and well kept. Remember, these are wild beings. They like the wild. They hate mirrors. Mirrors will drive them away. They love folk music and fire. And wherever magic is being performed, they're there. They're involved. And they love to play in straw. How funny is that? White dogs are fairy animals, especially if they have a ring around their neck, like a color, like a black circle or something around their neck. Smoke sends a fairy away. You know how we do when we're feng shuiing or we're doing shamanic work and we want to smudge with this sacred sage that smokes things up. It not only drives away negative energy, it also sends them away. Not permanently, but it does, you know, get them away from you. And bells and wind chimes. Now, this always cracks me up because you see so many fairy bells where they'll have a fairy on top of a bell. They don't like bells. Wind chimes, the sound is too much. And getting back to the smudging or the clearing of a space, we take sage, the smoke, to clear out, and then we follow it with bells. So, you know, here you go. But do leave them offerings if you're wanting to make friends. Now, I get a little aggravated with them because they'll take things of mine and I'll be looking right at the location where I put it down and it's not there. And I come back a few minutes later and it's there. So, you know, as everything is energy. Energy can blink in and out of this reality. It's just the nature of, you know, the world or the universe we live in. Let's talk a little bit about the flowers that they like. Now, herbs are big. They love herb gardens. Thyme in particular. Basil is a plant that draws dragons. Very protective. Elves hover around basil also. Clover, no accident that leprechauns are connected to clover. They are too. I love a clover bed. Jasmine, who doesn't love jasmine? Whew. I can imagine the smell of that right now. The more ancient wise berries are around jasmine, and they teach discernment and discrimination. Daffodils have glowing fairies. Daisies have fairies, elves, dryads, and nature spirits. This is one of the best plants to start with to communicate and work with fairies. Now, what are dryads? They're really cool. I've been really wanting to make them. They look like twigs and parts of trees. Gardenias, my all-time favorite flower for smell. My other favorite flower is orchids. Gardenias help with telepathy, and they are very protective of children, the fairies that live with them. The orchid is a favorite plant of satyrs and nymphs. Now, satyrs are the really, really sexual critters that look like half goat and half man. Pan was the head satyr, and because of this energy, the orchid represents sensuality and sexuality, especially in women. Geraniums, very protective of the home, especially red ones beside the front door. The elves oversee them, and it strengthens your aura. And then we have Iris. Iris was the Greek goddess of the rainbow. And so the fairies connected to Iris are fairies of the rainbow. So there's a lot of colors. And this helps to open your inner vision or your third eye chakra. The lilacs. We have a lot of lilacs in Colorado. And lilacs prefer alkaline soil, which is probably why there aren't many in Louisiana. I never saw lilacs growing in Louisiana. It was more about azaleas. Well, here everybody has lilacs, and lilacs are filled with fairy and elf activity. The flowers themselves have a musical fairy quality to them. Lilies are connected to the winter solstice fairies, as well as Archangel Gabriel or Gabriel. The rose, now roses seem to pop up in everything, and roses are very connected to angelic hierarchy. Red, obviously, is love and fertility. Roses are also divination and telepathy plants. The mistletoe, now mistletoes grow in oak trees, and oak trees are one of the sacred trees. Full of wisdom. And the mistletoe is for protection. And it's also a very magical plant, often used in a lot of spells, magic. I get a kick out of Colorado's trees. I'm not talking about the aspen and the birch and all of that and the evergreens up in the mountains. I'm talking about just the trees that grow in neighborhoods and things. Their personalities are very scruffy. You know, in Louisiana, oak and pine trees are very common, but you don't see that much here. And the oak trees, the personality, the tree spirit is very dignified and elegant and royal and wise. The trees here, I think they're maple, but I'm not sure. I gotta research my trees in Colorado, but the personalities are kind of gruff and scruffy. They don't feel real refined, but I can feel that essence. And we have one right outside our house, and I'm going to need to take the time to sit down and communicate with him, because every time I go outside, we have this thing where we look at each other, and then I go on about my business. But I need to formally introduce myself and have a conversation. You know, when I was a child living, you know, especially in the South, I climbed trees. That was, in addition to being outside all days, a lot of my time would be spent in trees. So I have a very strong connection to them. Oleander. Now, oleanders are a tropical plant, I would say. Or, you know, they prefer lots of heat. They live in California. They live in Florida. They live in Louisiana. And the oleander, the yellow ones, they cannot stand that, and they can cause sickness in children. So most of the oleanders you see, though, are pink and white, and they also love strawberries. You know, when I was talking about how they like straw, the farmers would say that they could tell that the fairies had been in the barns playing in the straw. Now, some gemstones that also resonate in particular. Now, obviously, quartz crystal. And whenever I build my fairy booth, I always make sure to scatter it with natural gemstones for them, because I have a lot of gnomes in my booth. Tiger eye, which looks like gold, and it's like streaks of gold and brown. Starlight. Now, this stone always fascinates me because it doesn't feel like a stone. It feels more like driftwood. It's shaped like a cross. It's little tiny. Peridot, this is a kind of a clear green stone, real pretty green, like a shamrock green. Jade, the deeper green, which is very common in the Asian culture. And emeralds. Oh, they love emeralds. As far as trees that are sacred to the fairy realm, obviously I said the oak. The elder is a big one. Now, I don't think seen an elder tree. Birch trees, the willow trees. Now, the willows have dryads living in them, those little beings that I told you look like part of the tree. If you have a chance to watch the slideshow I attached to this episode, I actually put a tree picture in there to give you an idea of how fairies may present themselves. You can look at the bark on this tree and it looks like a man's face in the tree. So the tree creatures are, you know, they're part of that same fairy world. The rowan tree is also very sacred. Now, thorny bushes and trees generally are, their inhabitants are the dark or the negative fairies. I'm telling you, you can read these fairy tales and get a lot of ideas based on the details they give you in the story. The USA's trees, the birches, the tulip trees, the giant redwoods, magnolias, cypress, maples. So this maple tree that I'm telling you about, this scruffy guy that I have living outside my house, I can't wait to meet the personality of him. Mulberry trees. We had a mulberry tree in my yard when I was a child, and I loved that tree so much. It was right there where we all played. And have you ever heard the song, Here We Go Round the Mulberry Bush or Mulberry Tree? That was a dance they performed on summer solstice and Yule or winter solstice for protection. Did not know that. Now, protection from fairies. We're going to get into the protection and the changelings that I said, what I mentioned briefly earlier. Protection. Iron is their worst enemy. And what do you notice around farms? Iron horseshoes hung above doorways. Four-leaf clovers actually break an enchantment that a fairy's put on you. Heather in the home. A witch's broom or besom by a fireplace is actually protective. And funny enough, robin birds, which we do have here, fairies don't like them. Bluebells, when you hear bluebells ringing, they mean that negative fae are coming. Incense, they don't like. Frankincense, basil, sandalwood, clove, and cinnamon. Now, this is something true not only of fairies, but of spells, curses, negative entities. Crossing over water breaks the spell, breaks the attachment because it grounds the energy. Now for the children and the changelings. And you know, the more and more I learn about star seeds and ETs and all these things, this totally makes sense to me. The fairy realm, they say, you know, their DNA has been watered down. You know, their survival rates have gone down just like every other species. So the story goes that they'll take children, babies, to their world to enhance their gene pool. And so that, you know, when I told you early on that people wouldn't use their child's real name or full name up until they were 4 or 5 years old, this is why. So what the story is, the fairies would replace the human child with a failure to thrive fairy child. So what would happen is the parents would go in, the child would be perfectly healthy and rosy in complexion. The parents would go back in the next morning and suddenly have this very, very sick child that looked like it was aged and withdrawn. And this would be the changeling, is what it would be called. Garlic, rue, which is an herb, dill, rosemary, and iron were placed under the crib for protection. Now, I actually have had a friend who had a baby that I'm not going to say it was a changeling, but she had, you know, we have this, what, SID, sudden infant death that we get, you know, here in this country. And she had a little girl that passed away for absolutely no explainable reason once it was about 2 months old. Entrapment in the fairy realm. Now, this is why they warn you about the fairies, because they say if you ever get trapped in their realm, you don't get out. You know, a few lucky souls got out. Remember, what was it? Who was that guy? Was it Rumpelstiltskin that fell asleep at the tree, woke up like 150 years later or something? Time doesn't exist in the fairy realm like it exists here. So you may think you've been gone 10 minutes and you come back to this realm and it's been 50 years, you know, and you're an old man. So they say the ways to get it to what the ways that you get stuck there is by accepting gifts when you're there, dancing with them. Now, their music is very, very entrancing and enticing, and it would be very easy to get caught up in that. Music is used to enchant and lure you to their world. Now, if you're doing meditations and pathworking, your third trip to the fairy realm is one of your interactions with the fae forever. They say never, ever run from a negative fae. Be honest, sincere, and polite. So I'm going to leave you with these last ideas. In the last year or two, I've been working almost on a daily basis with the fairy realm by building environment for them and putting them into this pretty much theatrical display that I use at parties and events. And as I've been doing this, working with them, going into their mindset, into their world, I can feel that realm as close as I can feel the next room in my house. It's very, very strong. I can feel it. And I can also feel why people think they would love to go there and stay. But that's part of the enchantment of it, calling you in. So there's many ways to interact with the fairy realm and draw them more and more into your life. If you would like to learn more about me, about my company, Mystical Empress, or about any of the services that I offer, you can go to www.mysticalempress.com. The fairy stuff comes up in the shaman section of the website. Also, I teach individual classes. You know, I work with people one-on-one. They want to learn these things about, you know, metaphysics, fairy realm, whatever. Also, we've got the psychic, the feng shui, the astrology, and the life coaching there. Our numbers are 720-965-0062 or 720-900-9727. We have Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, Google+, LinkedIn, all these different social media channels where we try to keep fresh information for you to learn and grow. I thank you very much for joining me for this show. It's been a great pleasure for me to share this world with you. And I send you many blessings in the week to come, especially through Beltane, which is May the 1st. And I ask you to look around every corner for the enchantment and the magic that's always there, waiting for you to discover it. Mystical blessings, everyone.